It was fun. I was like, oh, neat.
I haven't seen it yet. Oh. Yeah, so I can't wait to just check it all out. But it was, you know, that whole weird process of kind of doing something and manifesting, or the reactions that you do, I have no idea what you're reacting to. I mean, you have an idea, but that's about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, working with the green screen, and that was all new for me. So it was nice to see it all come together, to be like, okay, I was nervous the whole time about if my reactions were going to match the effects, and luckily Mimi was there to sort of say and explain, you know, this is going to be a bigger effect, so let's try it again, or vice versa. And I had Robert Duvall to my left, so I could sort of gauge all my... I would just be like, what's he up to over there? Cheap.
That is awesome, as it would seem to me, to have someone like that there with you.
Totally awesome, yeah. And you just can't believe it. And, you know, he would tell stories sort of... Between takes, he's just totally casual. I mean, he's so at ease as an actor that he doesn't have that... There's no anxiety at all. He can just sort of chat, you know, about... He would be talking... often he would say, like, what they had for lunch at craft service.
He'd be
like,
right.
I went over and checked it out, and they have pork chops. You know, you're like, oh, my God. And then in the next breath, he's telling you a story about, you know, The Godfather, about being on the set of The Godfather. And, you want to write those down, but then you're like, and then the poor child. Okay, whatever, with poor child, you know. You just can't. It was so amazing. And he was so generous. I mean, that's what's really most amazing, is an actor who's been around that long and done that body of work just doesn't have to give you anything. Mm-hmm. And he is... incredibly generous, creating stuff off camera to keep your reactions fresh, and knowing all his lines at 6 a.m. and, you know, no mini sides, and just very professional, and wanting to learn from you. I mean, I think that's what's most interesting, and probably why he's so talented, is that he's still learning, wanting to see young filmmakers and independent films, and wanting to know what we're all about, and you know, just he's still learning, just like a true artist, you know.
So it teaches you something.
It does. Taught me a lot. I mean, I learned a lot by working with him.
Yeah. So I think all of us, you know, at that time while we were shooting, he had just sold his movie, The Apostle. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of watching that final completion for him, that arc of, and then hearing the stories of him trying to get it made. We've all heard by now, but trying to get it made, and nobody wanted to give him money. And just very exciting to watch that happen, you know, as a young, aspiring filmmaker, to say, you know, here's somebody who's reached the level of his career, but nobody would give him money to make the movie he wanted to make. So it was very encouraging and inspiring at the same time.
It is. Well, yes. When you hear that he had so much trouble to raise what would, I guess, today be considered a paltry sum, it's kind of shocking in a way.
Shocking.
It was very much so.
Especially if he's involved. Yeah. I mean.
But that's I guess, the nature of the business. Uh-huh. That's the lesson learned. It's, you know, what have you done for me lately, and how much money can you make me
right
now with that in the studios at work?
You guys have a real challenge in this movie, I think, of bringing a humanity to what otherwise could just be a big technical beat of a movie, you know what I mean? And then one of the things I liked about the movie is each character does seem to register as a person. What is the work involved in something like that to bring that kind of thing to what must be a big enterprise you're hooked into?
I think really not to make it campy. I think initially starting off with the script, we were helped with that. It was already laid out for us in the fact that we deal with a meteor hitting the Earth, and that the writer in his own mind didn't shy away from that. Let's deal with the destruction, and now let's deal with the people and how they react to, you know, the tragedy and the destruction of it all. And then just putting yourself in that position, what would you do? How would you feel? And again, Duvall and Morgan Freeman, and Vanessa Redgrave.
Vanessa Redgrave too. It's like, what a, you know, just
credibility to the initial
brilliant actors. You know, I mean, those three alone, it's like, how do you miss? But also, I think the script. I think you're right. I mean, I think we were helped. I mean, disaster movies have been proven not to work when you don't care about the people who are in the disasters. You know, if you don't care if the volcano is tackling the people, then it doesn't work. But if you sort of like the people or are interested in them in any way, then you're interested in the disaster. And I think that this movie, by number one, putting the disaster so late, gives the storytelling time to really do its job. You actually get to know a bunch of people. It's not two or three, it's, you know, eight or nine or ten whom you get to care about before this thing occurs. And then that just makes the stakes so much higher. Just good storytelling, good writing. And Mimi. I would say Mimi, too, actually, was really helpful, especially with our parts, which were small, you know, ish, in terms of what we got to, where we got to show who we were. We didn't have a lot of opportunity to do that, so it would be little things, you know, and she was really good about that, like sitting down with us and discussing who we were and and where we had opportunities to bring that out, you know, because they were few. So she was great about that.
How did you guys prepare for playing a pair of astronauts in this film? Unlike a lot of astronaut films, didn't deal at all with your training.
Yeah, well, the biggest training for us was the physical training. Really, we had Jerry Griffin on the set, so he would take care of the technical stuff, what to say, what button to push, but really how to make the zero gravity look real and feel real, how to move and, you know, at what rate, what speed. That was it. We spent a week ahead of time, 6 days, really learning. And not just for us, but the people pulling us up and down. That's one person, side to side is another person, so we could all kind of be in sync with what we were doing. That was the most difficult training, and then actually just going through it hours on end in those suits and hanging in the air.
There was a lot of learning on the set, too, in terms of some of the technical talk and the button pushing and all of that. I mean, we would just be like, Jerry, come up here. You know, he'd come up and you just do a better job when you know what you're saying and you know what button you're pushing. And, you know, it just, you seem less like an actor in space and more like an astronaut. and then I'd say the other part of the preparation for me playing an astronaut wasn't the technical stuff, but the sort of researching what kind of person becomes an astronaut, especially, you know, I just, it's so different from who I am. I mean, I would react entirely different than an astronaut reacts to that situation, and they have such a sense of control and single-mindedness about their mission, and all of that stuff, the sort of makeup of someone who becomes an astronaut was interesting for me in terms of my acting preparation. But
did you meet any astronauts?
Well, Jerry Griffin was our technical advisor. He's an astronaut. And we had a few others on the set who would sort of come at different days and met, you know, Jerry would always introduce us. And
did Jerry actually go up?
He never did go up. He was mission control. But but there was another astronaut on the set, and I don't remember
his name. David something. I forgot his name.
Who had been up a lot. Mm-hmm. So he was helpful, too, and just discussing what it looks like and how awestruck you are the first time and just the sort of emotional aspects of that kind of work, you know?
I think when David came on the set, we were so blown away. The first time he came on was when we were landing the space shuttle to the docking bay, and he kind of came in, remember this, in the cockpit, and he said, well, this is actually designed like the real one. He said, I think I remember how this was done, and this button does this, and you do this, and he was teaching Ron, because Ron was doing the actual landing, and I was kind of navigating next to him, and just to say, wow, I mean, to hear him, somebody who had actually been there, to talk to him and, you know, touch him, and just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You meet any women?
I didn't meet any. I read a lot. I went on the internet and read sort of everything I could find about women astronauts and the thing I and sort of what they had to say about being a woman and becoming an astronaut and all of that. But the thing I found most interesting about my part, about the part of Andrea Baker, is that there was never any discussion about her being a woman, which I loved. It was the first time. I mean, I read women, smart women parts all the time, and they're constantly sort of scientists or doctors, but they have nothing to do. They have the degrees, but they don't have anything to do or say that's interesting. So for me, it was so much more compelling just to have her be a woman. Who cares? She could have been anything, but have something to do, you know. So I found that really refreshing and much more sort of ultimately feminist than sort of creating a woman who has 6 degrees and having her useless. So
how did you handle the aftermath of Private Parts?
The aftermath was all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people enjoyed the movie, so for me it was good. I mean, it was a nice personal experience working on it, and then professionally it was good, too, because people saw it and liked it, so it was nice for me. It worked out well.
Do you have a friendship ongoing with Howard?
I do.
And do you ever go on the show?
I do.
Yeah. And does he want you to do the sequel, or are they going to do a sequel?
I think he would have me do the sequel, and I would definitely do it. And there's talk. Mm-hmm. I don't know how serious it is or what when they're talking about it. You know, there's always talk, so I don't know actually if it will occur, but I would do it. Mm-hmm. Happily.
What's your reaction, both of you, when you first see your work? I mean, are you objective enough now that you look at that as someone else, or are you totally just picking apart every little thing you do? How does it work when you see the finished thing and you're in it?
I don't think I'm objective enough. I haven't seen this finished product yet, but yeah, my first thing, I have to say, I look at everything that's wrong that I did initially, and then I had to see it a second time to kind of pull back and see the whole story. I mean, I like people to say, hey, I look at the whole thing at first, but you just don't. Cause you, and also, you remember, for me, all the different takes we did and the one they chose, and why did they choose that? This was a better take. I did something better here. So all those things go in the mind. I have to see it 2 or 3 times to really get the whole flow. of the piece.
Yeah. I like movies better when I'm not in them.
Right?
A lot better.
So I think in a way, as opposed to a stage actor, it would be like a teaching thing for an actor because you get to see yourself.
Yeah, and it is. I actually, when I did Murder One, a lot of actors don't watch their dailies. Mm-hmm. And I would actually, on this last film I did, I didn't watch mm-hmm. them. And I think that might have worked out better for me. But in Murder One, I used to watch them all the time. And because I went to work every single day, I thought, well, I might as well learn. Mm-hmm. I might as well sort of like look at it in the privacy of my own home, you know, like look at it, and then go back to work the next day and try to fix what I think I was messing up or whatever. So for me, I used that as, I mean, I learned more in those 2 years than I probably ever will in terms of growth, speed of growth. But no, I hate going to the movies when I'm in it. Not a nice night out. You don't want to be my dick. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, how many of us get your face blown up on the screen?
And who wants to?
Right?
Such torture. It's really so much fun to do what we do, and then there's the yucky, there's the yucky, yucky, yucky moment.
Nerve-wracking.
Ugh. Like, ugh.
I used to be one of those actors where I didn't want to watch dailies at first, and it was Jimmy Smith on L.A. Law who said, go. Watch and learn.
Yeah.
You learn so much faster because you see everything you did, and then you can watch that other actor you respect and watch what they you're really studying, because you're talking about working with Robin Duvall. Mm-hmm. She's working closer. But, you kind of watch on the fly.
Totally.
While you're working, but there you can get right up to their face.
Yeah. When I would watch dailies from Murder One, I would look at Stanley Tucci's work. And it was just such and take after take after take, and little things that he changed, and things that he kept,
and
such simplicity. He just, for Stanley, he'll do a whole scene, and then he'll just sort of, this is the only motion he chooses. And it's like, it's enough, and you're like, oh, that was brilliant, and I'm sort of going there like, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm a clown. I'm a circus clown. So you learn, you get better and better, hopefully.
You're doing a film with him, actually.
I did do a film with Stanley Tucci right after Murder One. It's called Life During Wartime, and went to Sundance this year. Not in competition, but went limited. And, it was great fun. David Arquette and Kate Capshaw, quirky little black comedy. Mm-hmm. Stanley is a riot. I mean, he is just the most fun person I've ever worked with. He is crazy funny. He's shameless. Just shameless.
Shameless.
So anything for a joke. Anything for a laugh.
Did that come out?
Like Ron Eldon.
That one hasn't been commercially released
yet. No, not yet. I think Sony bought it or something. I'm not clear. I'm horrible at all that stuff, and I generally just don't pay attention to any of it. But I think Sony's involved now on some level, and they're sort of figuring out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know the facts.
And you're doing a hockey movie?
I just finished a movie called Mystery Alaska with Russell Crowe and Burt Reynolds up in Alaska. I mean, in Canada. We shot it in Canada.
Where?
In Canmore, which is about an hour.
Yeah, Alberta.
Yeah, Alberta. Yeah. Loved it. Loved it.
And we're in the mountains as well?
In the middle of the Canadian Rockies, yeah. It's just tremendously beautiful. I'm from New Jersey, and I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. I couldn't believe it. I literally couldn't believe it. I would pull over all the time just because I thought I was going to kill people. I was like, I mean, these mountains are like you see in postcards, or maybe you all have seen them. I had never seen anything like it. I've seen some hills.
Larry, you made a hint that you were an aspiring filmmaker. You said as a filmmaker. Is what stage of your...
Just finished yesterday wrapping my first feature film as a co-executive producer with Tim Reed in Virginia. It's a film called Asunder. It stars Debbie Morgan from East Bayou and Michael Beach from ER Soul Food. And it's a suspense thriller. Should be out hopefully next year if everything goes well. And I'm playing another psycho-type character who stalks Debbie Morgan's character. Becomes very obsessed. Or in love with her. It turns to obsession.
Sick twist as well.
Yeah, that's very sick and twisted, yeah. So
that.
Yeah, that, and I kind of get off on this, on the whole business side of things. I'm learning. I'm kind of in my infancy stage, but it's fascinating to me, the whole process from an idea to selling, making the film and selling it. So I'm learning as we go.
Do you ever think of going back to TV?
Yeah, in fact, that's one thing. My brother and I are creating a series now that we're pitching around town and discussions with some companies about. Yeah, but not too much. I mean, to do it now, I would like to come back in another capacity as a creator and a producer of something. But definitely, I mean, that's You can tell such great stories in television, and obviously that's where I've done most of my work. And I've been very spoiled to work with Bochco. We call ourselves Bochco Babies, Murder One, L.A. Law, but, you know, with the writing and DreamWorks and Spielberg last year, High Incident, playing a cop, you get very spoiled, so it has to be the right project and the right kind of character.
There was some talk of you maybe doing a Martin Luther King biography.
Not me, no. I heard Cuba might. Oliver Stone was talking about doing the Martin Luther King movie, and I think Cuba was like, Cuba Gooding was going to play the Martin Luther King.
Because, well, I've seen a quote from Yolanda King,
so
she liked.
Oh, Yolanda's. Oh, I know Yolanda. Maybe, yeah. Well, that's sweet of her to say that.
Yeah.
That could be fun, actually.
Yeah, what do you know?
That's right. No, I'm with that. Call Yolanda. I'm down with that.
Am I right for it?
That's funny. Do you have any questions, sir?
Just no, and then I'm fine.
Yeah, so lovely. It's kind of stealth mode back here.
Do you find as actors, it sounds like there aren't the walls between TV and movies that there were years ago. You weren't supposed to do one or the other, but just one.
Getting much better.
Thank God.
Helen Hunt winning the Academy Award.
Change the rules.
Is that a first that a star of a current series has won an Oscar?
Oh, of a current series.
I don't know. Historically, but it doesn't happen often, if at all.
Yeah, it probably is.
And not only a series, but the fact she's doing a sitcom. That's almost unheard of, to do a sitcom and do a film at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally changed.
Yeah, actually now. Taya. Friends and Taya. That's right. It's happening much more. But to get that kind, not only do a film, but to garner the respect and the awards and the Oscars. So good for her. We were talking about,
I think that's like great, too. I think it's silly snobbery. I mean, that prevented it before. A good actor's a good actor's a good actor. So I think it's terrific. And also, I think TV's changed. I mean, I think some of the best work is being done on TV. I mean, I think NYPD, I'm more fulfilled watching an episode of NYPD Blue than I am most movies I pay $8 for. So,
yeah.
And that's free in my home every Tuesday night. So, you know, I think that's good that wall's being broken down. Good creators. So.
Yep.
Seems like we're in a golden age of television. I mean, in terms of the dramas and the comedies.
Oh, yeah.
Some good stuff.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah. And they do it, if you really think about it, in 7 days, NYPD Blue's done in 8 days, for a hundredth of what a film is made for, and they only have 46 minutes or 43 minutes or whatever it is of storytelling time.
Mm-hmm.
That's tremendous. And I leave an episode of that sometimes more, you know, thought-challenged and more emotionally moved than films I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
Most Absolutely. Often, you know, and that's really a feat. I just think that's incredible storytelling.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, Stephen Bochco. He's no joke. He's not playing games.
And David Kelly.
He is a storyteller.
And Bochco photos.
Yeah, and David Milch, too. I mean, yeah. As far as NYPD Blue. I'm here. We're doing a press conference with Bochco.
That's right. Bochco. Well, I can
hear. Because it seems that, I mean, Pete, you know, my friends talk as excitedly about something they've seen on television as we used to about movies 20 or 30 years ago when I was in college. You know, that kind of, that's really what seems to be the hot thing at the moment, is certain TV things.
Yeah, it's really refreshing. Yeah, Alan McBeal's on the tongues of a lot of people right now. David Kelly's baby.
When you go to work, do you think, now I'm acting in television, I act this way? Is it different when you go to a movie?
I think so. I mean, the only difference is that... No, I don't think so. I mean, I hope not. You know, I mean, I hope the acting's the same.
Yeah.
The difference is that in TV, at least on Murder One, it's not as precious in that you don't have time to be precious. So in film, I'll think about, like, I'm going to move this here or whatever. You think about exactly what you're doing, or I do, and then in TV, you may not. I mean, in TV, I remember one time I said to a director in Murder One, I was like, you know what, I don't think I'd ever be walking in this scene. Like, it shouldn't be a walk and talk, because we should be in my office or whatever. And they're like, right, I know. We're lit for the walk and talk, so as soon as you're ready, let's just go. You know, like, and you make it work. You're like, okay, I guess it could be a walking scene, you know. I mean, it's just not as precious. So, it's no, but it's the same acting. You know, you want to be truthful under those circumstances.
Sure.
And that's, so it's the same acting, it's just different speeds and pressures.
Yeah, but there is on the big screen, you can afford to be even more subtle, right? With the reaction, the camera's right there, and you're gonna be 40 feet high. But the work's definitely the same. Just the expression of it may tinker a little bit.
You better work on that.
No, but
I'm like, huh?
I just remember that was my biggest.
See, too big.